Alrighty guys, it's the Week in Review, and tonight we're going to cover all of the big news items that happened this week in WWE, including The Fiend, who seems to be targeting Randy Orton next, Roman Reigns and Jey Uso continuing to absolutely kill it in their storyline, and Bayley and Sasha having their rematch on SmackDown again. All this and tons more right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast for this Week in Review on this November 1st, 2020. Hope everyone's Halloween was nice, fun, safe, because now we are into November, and good Lord, guess what is next? Yeah, Tuesday is Election Day, so really, look out. It's going to be obscene, and whether you are into politics or you're not, it's going to be unavoidable and an unavoidable part of your life where people are either going to be talking about it. There's going to be chaos, hopefully no looting, rioting and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, who the heck knows, right? This is 2020. But sure to be an eventful week of the first week of November here. Just absolute chaos coming your way front and center in just a couple of days. So if you haven't already voted, go out and vote. You know, I don't really, you know, regardless of who you're voting for, just go vote, right? It's your right. Do it. Exercise it. Okay, that's my patriotic plug for the evening. But you're here for wrestling, and we've got a whole plate full of it for you guys to digest because it is your Week in Review, which means we touch on everything that happened this week in WWE, including Raw and SmackDown. More SmackDown than Raw because we've already done a full SmackDown or a full Raw review on my end. I know I have our great co-host Michael Ritter who ends up covering SmackDown, but I also want to kind of weigh in on the show as I haven't really talked about it. So we do kind of focus more heavily on SmackDown because I don't want to redo a Raw review. That wouldn't make sense, right? So we're going to get to all of that, of course, in just a couple minutes, but we do have voicemails. You guys have been piling in the voicemails and an email question as well, suggestion. So we're going to get those started right away. But if you haven't joined the show or you want to contribute to the show by voicemail or by writing in and asking questions or giving your opinion, the email is realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to call in, easy, 518-952-0247. And we do have some new callers I see on our voicemail box here, as well as maybe a familiar voice or two. And we've got that as well as an email. And I guess I'll get to the email first, which as I go through it, I didn't realize it's just a voicemail. I mean, Chris wrote to me and put a voicemail in as an attachment. So shame on me. I thought it was an actual question. I saw a paragraph, but it was more just explaining about the voicemail. So we got a lot of voicemails to get to. We're going to get to as many as we can, and I'll respond to them. It kind of does tie in, though, to the Week in Review, because what's asked is often different topics of which are happening right now. And that's what this show is right now, is the Week in Review. So that does tie in very nicely. Again, let me know, guys, if you would like me to tone down the voicemails, ratchet up the voicemails, if you want more on the show or less, or its own dedicated show, or if you say nothing, I'll assume that it's just the way that I'm doing it is good with you, but I want to make sure that I'm not overwhelming you or not giving you enough voicemails, because it is a relatively new thing that we've done here. So we do have a ton of stuff to get to, and again, based on how many voicemails we've got, hang on, let me take a look at how many voicemails we've got here. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 voicemails. Yeah, I'm going to have to probably take out one or two and save them for the Raw review. But if I don't get to you, don't worry, I will get to your voicemail. It's saved, it's here, and I encourage everyone to call in and give me your opinions, because I do play all voicemails that are applicable. Sometimes I get like one or two word voicemails. I mean, just doesn't make sense to play those, or if you cuss or swear or just, you know, anything else along those lines. I mean, let's be real, I'm not going to put that stuff on here. So let's get to the very first voicemail and see who it is.
Hey, Matt. It's Chris from Switzerland again. I hope you are doing well. Grazie, as we say hello in Switzerland. I have some thoughts for you. I was watching the Untold between Randy Orton and The Undertaker, and Randy Orton has thanked at the end a big thank you to The Undertaker, and he has told something about a kind of a meeting. Can you explain what kind of meeting that was and Hall of Fame between him, Bob Orton, Randy's dad, Laurinaitis, and it was Dragon Steamboat, right? You have any idea what kind of meeting that is and why it is so meaningful, and that he now understands how bad it was, what he has done at that time? And yeah, he entered Undertaker for sure. It could say, yeah, let him down, and Vince have maybe would have done that, and Randy would never be that star he is today, and maybe always like The Miz, only mid-carder, I don't know. And the second point was the creativity for the wrestlers. Sorry for my bad English sometimes. To me, some wrestlers are missing their... They feel like they're full, they are in chains, you know what I mean, for their creativity. It's like they cannot break out, and everything is so dead scripted sometimes. And just the words, the thing, what you have to do in the ring. And is it not a better thing if much more wrestlers have more creativity freedom instead of a deadly scripted thing? But it, my eyes, it can be also a dangerous thing if they have too much creativity freedom. And maybe the scripted thing is something good for wrestlers who are maybe beginning and to get in touch with the material and what it's important and something like that. But after a while, some wrestlers like Orton, why didn't... I mean, yeah, maybe they have some freedom in the backstage, yeah, but... I hope you understand what I'm meaning. sorry for my bad English, and stay healthy. That was my thoughts, and greetings to all your listeners and to all your fans here, and I am one of them. We are a big team, we're getting bigger, and it's I'm happy and looking forward to listen to your shows in the next weeks. Listen to you soon. Bye, and see you soon.
Hey, Chris. So thank you so much for calling in again. Great to hear from you. It's been a little while. First of all, your English is really not that bad. I understood what you were talking about. The very first thing you mentioned about the meeting with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Undertaker and himself, and I forget who else he said, maybe Michael Hayes, that was in reference to the meeting that they had before WrestleMania, the very first time Orton went against the Undertaker. And... the reason he missed it was he alluded to that he had partied a little bit too hard the night before, meaning he was hungover, right? Like he was hungover, drinking too much the night before, and missed the meeting about their match. And he thought that would really put a nail in the coffin of his career before it could even really get started. That he missed that meeting, that pre-match meeting with all of the agents and the Undertaker himself for the very first time they were going to meet. I mean... I could totally see the disappointment in his eyes and just the pit in his stomach of missing that meeting. I mean, I can feel it. I can feel it through the screen. Now, your second point about the whole scriptedness. Yeah, like this has been, I think, one of the biggest complaints fans have had for many years now. That it feels too scripted. That it feels too... just planned out and like a show rather than an organic cameras happen to be there while wrestlers are there wrestling and settling feuds and fighting over championships. It's more of just like everything's timed out perfectly. Everybody has a cute zinger line for their promo, everything. And you want an example of a scripted segment this week? You want an example of one and one that didn't feel scripted? Try the whole on SmackDown where it was Natalya, Billie Kay, and Bianca Belair, where they were all standing there trying to convince Adam Pearce that they should be the captain of the SmackDown women's team. What? I mean, oh, we're going to get to that segment. I mean, it's one that was just glossed over, but it's one that is the perfect embodiment of why fans feel like things are too scripted. It's a backstage segment that everyone's staring at the camera. No one's really facing one another. So it's always people standing perfectly in line. So everyone gets in the camera shot and they talk to the camera rather than talking to the person, you know, next to them. Everybody has their cute line that they say. It feels very scripted and cartoonish. And that's exactly what that segment was. And I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean, Chris. As a whole, it is a very micromanaged organization. Very. And we've had several reports come out from people that have left that there is really an audience of one, that people are there to make sure that Vince likes what they're doing, not necessarily what they think is the crowd is going to like, but what Vince would like. And by extension, the fans, in theory, right? It's not always the same thing. What Vince wants is not always what the fans want. And Vince would probably be the first one to say, it's not what I want. It's what the fans want. But that's not the culture that he's created. So he can say that until he's blue in the face. The fact of the matter is that the people there, the talent there, from everything we've heard, and this is corroborated many times through talents that have left the company, that it is not what the fans want necessarily, or it is always about what Vince wants and making sure that everyone does what Vince feels would be the great thing to do. And it's probably why creative is also kind of treading water at times to make Vince happy rather than making the fans happy. They put Vince ahead of everything else, which comes across in volumes on screen. And it's a problem that I don't think is ever going to really go away. And I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon. And I also thought about this too on SmackDown while I was watching it. You know, there's so much scripted promo. I think that the WWE has heard that loud and clear. There's no way that creative and upper management have not heard that from fans for a long period of time, that things feel too scripted. Scripted promo, scripted this, scripted that. It feels too scripted. That has had to have reverberated through the building in Stamford, Connecticut. There's just no way about it. But I think what the approach they've taken is, we're not going to stop creating the promos and having the talent memorize it. We're going to just maybe train them or put them in a class, an acting class, where they can take that scripted promo and make it sound less scripted, even though the root of the problem of having a scripted promo in the first place is not resolved. They're covering the symptom of that by just having the talent learn how to say their lines in a way that doesn't make them sound like they're saying their lines. Does that make sense? I hope it does. But I thought about that this week. I don't know where I came up with that. But I really have a hunch that it's not that they are going to do less scripted promos. They're just going to have talent learn how to say that, deliver it in a way that doesn't sound scripted, instead of just, you know, getting rid of scripted promos. I mean, which is the problem in and of itself. Now, could you have some talent probably do well in that scenario where it's just very basic? Here's where we want to go. Get us there. You fill in the lines. You're just, here's the destination. Drive us there. I think some talents would absolutely excel in that. And you would see a side of them that feels way more real and engaging, and you'd have an emotional connection more than you normally would. I think also it could be an unmitigated disaster for some, because some have never had that challenge as a talent where they are forced to, on the fly, come up with a vehicle to get from point A to point B. Instead, they're handheld, which doesn't allow the talent to grow to see if they really have what it takes. I think ad-libbing a promo is extremely important. And I don't think that it's ever going to happen. I think they enjoy their micromanagement of talent, which creates a fear of losing your job, and it creates a paranoia culture. It creates a paranoia culture up and down the line, from not just talent, but production to announcing, creative, obviously, office jobs. Everybody, from what I understand, again, I could be completely wrong, but it seems as if the culture in WWE is very cutthroat. It's very making sure it pleases Vince and nobody else. And it's always as if everyone's on edge working for Vince, and that's it. And that is not a good way for WWE to run a business, I think, from a people perspective. But I'm getting way into the weeds here. But that's what I think, especially with the massive cuts they had back in April. I'm sure that didn't do them any favors with, you know, managing the culture in WWE, which is, everything I hear is just it's not great. Okay, that was a long-winded answer, but it also tied in a little bit of week in review. See what I'm doing here? Okay, next voicemail.
Hey, man, this is Hunter from Georgia. I just have two quick things for you. One, do you miss the World Tag Team Championships and the WWE Tag Team Championships? I would prefer them over the Raw and SmackDown Tag Team Championships because I felt like they held more weight and they felt more significant. They felt more like meaningful. They meant something when you won them. And the new belts, well, the Raw and SmackDown belts, they feel more like toys or props. Like, they don't really care if they lose or win them. So yeah, I just want your opinion on that. And second thing is, this is a weird one, but do you miss when wrestlers' theme music actually, like, had a meaning? Like, their music reflected who their character was. It wasn't some generic beat or generic, like, rock sound. Like, you had, CM Punk's, like, This Fire Burns Always. Like, that song matched him so well. Or back when John Cena was a Thuganomics, you know, and matched him. Wrestler's theme music is what got me into, like, rock and music like that. Number one example, Jeff Hardy's No More Words theme song. When he would throw that WWE Championship up in the air for, like, celebration, and the chorus of that song would hit at the same time, it's just chills, man. And it was just the coolest thing I ever seen as a kid, and it made me love music more than ever. And that's really it, man. I appreciate you. I've been listening for a little over a year now. I used to drive 45 minutes to work, so I listen there and back. Now I just listen on my free time, you know. I appreciate it, man, and hope to call back soon.
Hey, Hunter, I believe that is the first time that you've called in, so thank you for calling in. I hope you call back. Great questions. Now, let me say that as far as the World Tag Team Championship and the Raw and or SmackDown Tag Team Championships goes, yeah, there's no question that the World Tag Team Championship had more value. But I think in general, there should be fewer titles, period, right? Like, I don't care what they call them as long as there are fewer of them. Whether that's a tag team championship, whether that's a kind of a mid to upper card level, like a US/IC title, and especially a world champion. I know that they're trying to create their own separate world, separate brands, but WWE has notoriously been terrible about keeping the world separate. I've made that very clear many times about how, and many examples of why WWE and how WWE has not kept their own promises of a brand split. I mean, a brand split is really just an on-paper thing because you have people crossing over all the time, pay-per-views and such, and just people showing up for no reason, and wildcard rules and all this other stuff. So, but in general, I like fewer championships. Why? Easy economics, right? Supply and demand. When there's more of something, it's worth less. There's really nothing more to it than that. And it's true in every facet of life, no matter what it is, something that there's less of something, it's worth more, period. So I would enjoy fewer championships. In fact, I would have one world champion that floats between two brands. I would allow the champions to float. That's okay. but I would not relegate a specific championship to that brand. It makes them like half the champion they could be. Why? Because they have half the talent pool that they're working with, right? So if this is truly a real brand split, that's easy for me to say, and they pretended that they are not going to cross brands and say they didn't, right? Like they never, ever crossed. And they were good boys and girls and they decided to stick to their own rules. Wouldn't it be way more exciting to have one world champion, one, say, intercontinental champion, you can drop the U.S. title, one tag team champion, one women's champion. Okay, fine, women's tag team championship. Boy, does that need depth, right? How much more exciting would it be if you just had one of those floating between brands? It would be way more exciting. And the belts would mean more, which was what we're supposed to all believe that we're here for anyway, is for championships. So there's your answer about championships in general. As far as music goes, I think it's an overlooked thing. I've never had that question asked. And it's a weird question, but it's a good question. Because I don't think that we consciously really think about a wrestler's music, whether or not it is applicable or adds to that individual's perception. Because, like you said, there are a lot of generic sounds, generic entrance music songs. But like you said, with CM Punk, that's something you pay attention to. It makes sense. The cult of personality, right? Triple H is iconic. The Rock, iconic. John Cena, iconic with Thuganomics and his new one. Well, I shouldn't say new, his current one. I mean, that one he's had is like 15 years old. But my point is, and to your point, yes, I think that wrestlers' entrance music should be thought out more. It is a lot of hodgepodge, just kind of genericness. And it's not thought out. And you know why? I think it's why it's not thought out. And sadly, I have to say this. Because the characters aren't well thought out. So if you don't know what the characters are going to be, how can you create music to kind of wrap it up? How can you create music to let the audience know what they're supposed to know and understand about this character? You can't. So you go with genericness, which is what a lot of wrestlers seem to be. Like they were all cut from the same cloth. We all say the same things. We all have the same cutesy promos. And it's hard sometimes to, yes, what I'm seeing and who I'm seeing is different. There are some different tones in their music and all that, but when my eyes see something different, but that sixth sense feels something that is the same, that's where the disconnect is. Because all promos sound the same, don't they? In general, it's all kind of the same cadence. They all went to the same school of promo. And, you know, I understand they're in WWE, but, you know, once in a while, a bit of a different promo and a different feel is good. So, yeah, I'm with you on the entrance music, though. There are certain ones that are iconic because it totally, it completely wraps up the character nicely to tell the fans who they're about to see. And it speaks to the depth of the character. But like I said, the reason is with generic music comes generic characters, and you can't have a song that makes sense when you don't understand the characters. So therein lies the problem. I think you're seeing a symptom and not the root with the music of the problem. So great questions. Okay, let's get to the next voicemail.
Hey, Matt, it's Kyle from New York. So I know you did a wrestling nostalgia about The Undertaker and Randy Orton because of the WWE Untold episode. So I have a wrestling nostalgia suggestion. Wrestling nostalgia suggestion. Since it's WWE celebrating the 30 days of The Undertaker thing, I was thinking maybe you can do, for like this, just for the month of November, every week, every wrestling nostalgia can be like an Undertaker topic. Undertaker nostalgia every week for the month of November. Also, the second thing I want to say is, what do you think is going to happen if Sasha Banks is SmackDown Women's Champion title reign? I hope this doesn't happen, but I think I want to have a long reign, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think Billy's going to win it back at TLC, and it's going to be Sasha Banks' first defense, just like always. She loses her first defense. Bayley will win at TLC. Then maybe Charlotte Flair will return at the Royal Rumble, and Sasha will be in the Royal Rumble also. And Sasha and Charlotte will be the final two women in the Royal Rumble, and everyone's going to be thinking, oh, Charlotte Flair's going to win again. She's going to win two Rumbles in a row. But then Sasha will win, and then she'll win the title back in Bayley at WrestleMania, and then Sasha will finally have a good title reign, because like I know you said in the past that usually typically WrestleMania title reigns usually go long. So I think this will be the reign when Sasha Banks comes back at WrestleMania. That'll be the reign where she finally has a really good long reign and doesn't just lose the first defense. So that's the two things I want to say. Let me know your thoughts. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Kyle. So first things first, yeah, that's a great idea about the wrestling nostalgia as far as doing a 30 for 30 that WWE is doing. Well, 30 days of The Undertaker, not 30 for 30, but and also kind of following suit here where we do a wrestling nostalgia every single week through November of The Undertaker. I think that's a really good idea. I may hijack that from you. That's a really good idea. Damn. I can't believe I didn't think of that. So, and now I'm publicly admitting that I didn't think of that. So how about that for an original thought? Thank you, Kyle. I may actually take that, heed that advice. Secondly, look, this Sasha and Bayley thing is turning into a damn dumpster fire, and it's heading that way. And the reason is not only did they botch, the turn was good, but they botched why we're supposed to like Sasha. Why? Because Bayley outsmarted her. As a heel, you should be the one outsmarted, not outsmarting the babyface. So that makes Sasha look like a doof, right? If she's the one that should have known that Bayley was going to turn on her and she didn't do it and didn't see it coming, then isn't really Sasha the fool? So were we supposed to be sympathetic because she wasn't smart enough to see it coming? And we've got no declaration from Sasha why we should like her other than just, oops, sorry, yeah, she got to me first. So yay, like me, right? I mean, that's essentially the reason we got. And then Sasha also, after all this, comes out in like she's obsessed with her like leather bodysuits and like, I don't know, what other bodysuits she's into. She comes out like dancing and when she's in a serious program and you're still concerned about your entrance to the degree of making sure you hit all your little moves that you do on the top of the stage, it's a disconnect for me. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Where I think it was last week, or the week before, where Sasha came out in like a red bodysuit and she had just been attacked by Bayley and she's in this serious feud and she just lost her best friend and all this stuff. And she's on stage and she comes out and she's more worried about making sure she hits all her little curve moves and stripper moves at the top of the stage. And it just makes no sense. I'm like, you're concerned about that right now? That's the part that's like, okay, that's just making sure you do your entrance because that's what you do when you're performing as a wrestler. To me, you should skip that. You should march to the ring, forget the formalities, and get down to business. I'm not a fan of when wrestlers make sure that even during a serious program, they're doing all these silly little movements that they would do as if they were, you know, just won the championship and they were just going through another day at the office. Kofi Kingston, on the men's side of this, the men's equivalent of the dancing, was Kofi Kingston coming out and throwing pancakes after he lost the WWE Championship to Brock Lesnar in 8 seconds last July. It's stupid. It's a disconnect for me, big time. But look, the reason I also say it's heading for a dumpster fire beyond the logic I just talked about, well, the lack of, is that they're having their rematch next week on SmackDown. What? So let me get this straight. I just want to make sure I'm following this to the creative's logic. They build this up for 6 months plus with Bayley and Sasha, right? They were doing a great job. These two were killing it. They captured every championship minus the NXT Women's Championship. And then the mountain started to fall. They lost the Women's Tag Team Championships. That mean absolutely nothing anyway. Sasha lost her Raw Women's Championship, and then Bayley lost her SmackDown Women's Championship, exactly the way that here on the show we predicted would happen, because they got to the top of the mountain, and guess what? The only way is down. It's exactly what we said here. And we were waiting for the turn and waiting for the turn, and it finally happened where Bayley turned on Sasha, and we're like, okay, here we go. Let's do this. And they turned it nice, and they did the chair around the neck. Nice touch. Bayley's on fire. We're feeling for Sasha, even though she didn't give us a reason other than just sympathy, which is a very shallow reason, by the way. And we didn't get, again, no explanation from Sasha, but then we get what? the SmackDown Championship for the Raw, the SmackDown Women's Championship gets the first time that they collide is on SmackDown. This was before the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. Anybody remember this? I do. You got to be kidding me. This should be on a pay-per-view. How is this not on a pay-per-view? And yet they have their first match on SmackDown. Yeah, we all knew that Bayley wasn't going to lose it then. She ends up losing it at Hell in a Cell. And then the rematch is again on SmackDown. Now, I know you may say, well, they got the Survivor Series pay-per-view coming up. They can't have a match there. Well, they could. There's a lot of double duty going on. And that winner would face Asuka. Or if they wanted to play the long game, Sasha could say, hey, I'll face you, or I'll give you a rematch, but it's not going to be until TLC. I've already got my schedule full at Survivor Series against Asuka. They could have done it that way. So now they're relegating SmackDown to being the big moments for these two, and it makes no sense. It should be about selling the network. It used to be about selling pay-per-views on cable networks. Now it's about selling the WWE network through your own streaming service. And it's just, I don't understand it. I do not understand why they're giving this away again on SmackDown. So I don't know. I don't know. It's absolutely ridiculous. So, okay. Boy, I'm heated up. All right, next voicemail.
Hi, it's Kyle from Baltimore, Maryland. I wanted to talk about, you know, Sasha and Bayley for next week's SmackDown and what happened this past week on SmackDown as well, with Bayley saying that she can never retain the championship, which is true and very stupid. So I always hated that. Hopefully this time be different, because Sasha's champion is really, she's really good, and she shouldn't be champion for a long time like everybody else has. So, but what do you think about that? And do you think that Sasha deserves to stay champion for one period of time? Because I do. I personally hope that she does. So, what do you think about that? Bye.
Hey, Kyle from Baltimore, Maryland. So we got Kyle from New York and Kyle from Baltimore, Maryland. So you just heard my explanation about Bayley and Sasha and the illogical steps how they got here and why they're giving away these matches on free TV is just, it's mind-blowing if you're running a business. But look, they know things that we don't, apparently. As far as Sasha having a long reign, I could see this going one of two ways. And before I give those one of two ways, I will say that I think she's just deserving of a long run. I don't think she should be the butt of a joke every single time she wins a championship that, well, Sasha can't retain it, so she's going to drop it the next time she defends it. I don't think that's good for her career. I think it would become a running joke if it happens again. I don't think that it would be a good thing for her. It would, I think, damage her character. I really do. I really do, because it's at the point where it's like, okay, yeah, that's like the monkey on her back. She needs to get it off before it ends up draining her of credibility. So I think that needs to go away. And I think Sasha is deserving of a long championship run. Now, who is that against? Beyond Bayley? I don't know. You know, who's going to step up? Carmella? Could Carmella step up against Sasha Banks? Probably. Charlotte is on Raw, so it can't be Charlotte. I don't know who's next. I would assume Bayley and Sasha probably fight through the end of the year. Like, they're in a program through the end of the year. Once we get to the Royal Rumble time, it'll reset itself. But from Survivor Series, they're not fighting at Survivor Series, but through the Survivor Series pay-per-view, through the TLC pay-per-view, that is probably the end of it. And then we get into a new program with whoever it may be. I mean, maybe it is Charlotte, because as we all know, every year that sometimes WWE is not very clear about the Royal Rumble winner. They just only have to get the challenge, or are they restricted to only challenging for the championships on their respective brand, or can they branch out into another brand's championship? Sometimes it goes both ways. We've seen it go both ways, so we'll have to see. But my prediction is that Sasha has a, quote, long run, which means 3 months. You know, 3 months is a long run nowadays. I don't know if she gets through WrestleMania. That would be, I think, really stretching it. Certainly she's deserving of it. I'm tired of the butt of the joke, not her. Again, if it happens again where she loses to Bayley on SmackDown this coming Friday, I would be very concerned about her character. Like, permanent damage from this, because every time she wins the championship, she can't defend it. That's not a good trait to have. not a good trait to have, and I think it's time to cement her as somebody that can defend her championship. So I'll be, as much as I like Bayley as champion, and I actually wouldn't have taken the belt off her until WrestleMania. I know many people that I've talked to anyway would agree with that. Maybe you don't, but to me, I'm a fan of big moments and big heel championship runs ending at WrestleMania. And keep in mind too, and I say this every year, but I want to make sure I'm clear about this to you guys, and I could be completely wrong. Like, being wrong's fun sometimes. But here is the thing. As we get closer to WrestleMania, particularly towards the end of the year, in December timeframe, even now, Survivor Series. To me, Survivor Series is the, I can see WrestleMania in the really far distance, but I see it. It's like the halfway point to WrestleMania. Like, we are climb the top, and now we just got to climb down to get to WrestleMania. That's how I feel. Like, we can actually kind of see it there a little bit. And with that said, look for more heels to become champion. Why? Because it's always a better story for babyfaces to be in chase mode heading towards WrestleMania, where they finally capture that championship. You're starting to see it already, right? Roman Reigns captured the Universal Championship. What do we have on Raw? We have Randy Orton capture the WWE Championship, right? So it's happened. We have Sami Zayn as Intercontinental Champion. We have Bobby Lashley as United States Champion. All four are heels, right? The only baby faces are on the women's side and the tag team champions. So the major four championships, the top four championships in WWE are all held by heels right now. And I think you're going to see that trend build as we get towards WrestleMania, because everything seems to reset at WrestleMania, where the baby faces usually get their big wins and big championship wins. And we can all clap and go, yay, and they have a 6-month run and drop it, maybe SummerSlam or Hell in a Cell or Survivor Series. So that to me is what I start to look out for now. Are heel championships or championships being put on the heels as we get towards WrestleMania season? We're creeping. We're, believe it or not, guys, listen, we're 2 months away from WrestleMania season. Think about that. That's mind blowing. We're 2 months away from WrestleMania season. Wow. I didn't really think about that until just now. Woo. All right. One more voicemail. We do have one more, but I think it's flown well, and it's tying in nicely a little bit to our weekend review. So this is our final voicemail of the night, and that would exhaust our voicemail list that we have right now. So the voicemail box will be empty after this. So it is your job to fill it up. Alrighty, let's listen to that final voicemail, and then we're gonna get to some more weekend review items.
Hey, my name is Brent. I am from Kentucky, and I am 15 years old. I love wrestling. I love watching Monday Night Raw. It's my favorite thing to do. People always say how they hate Mondays, but I don't know how you can hate Mondays when Monday Night Raw is on. Anyways, so my favorite thing to watch on Monday Night Raw is the Hurt Business, but lately it's been kind of annoying because I feel like Bobby Lashley, he's not being used to his full potential. I mean, when he was in TNA, he had like every single belt. And now he just has, like, the American, like, belt or whatever. But it doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal because he hasn't even given it up. He barely even shows it, if I feel like. And all he does is, like, fight Retribution or, like, that thing with Ricochet and Apollo and stuff. But it's kind of, like, boring and repetitive. I mean, other than that, I think that's my only complaint about it. I really do like that Randy Orton's champ again. That's pretty cool. He's my favorite. I like Asuka too. That's good. I'm not a big Roman Reigns fan because he's been a good guy too long, and I don't know, he's kind of not interesting as a heel, but I think that's just my personal preference. But yeah, other than that, all good. Thank you so much.
Hey, Brett, thank you for calling in. I'm glad that you did. It sounds like you're the first time caller. Feel free to call back. As far as Bobby Lashley goes, well, he is United States champion, right? So, they've at least put gold on him. It's better than what they were doing with him with Lana over the summer, last year, I think it's a better place for him than where he was being kind of Lana's sex toy, for lack of a better term. It seems to be a better fit for him in the Hurt Business as the muscle of the Hurt Business. He doesn't get a whole lot of mic time, but, you know, I have seen him in spurts get a hold of the mic in WWE, and it's never usually a pretty picture. He has not really blown me away with any of his promos. And yes, I saw a little bit of him in TNA, and he did have a lot more gold around his waist. But, you know, when you give him the mic here, it doesn't usually turn out well. He's not a great promo. He's a great look. He's a great athlete. Great guy, from what I understand. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what more they could be doing with him. I was hoping the Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre program a few months ago would actually be something for him, and he would capture the championship and maybe go on a run of his own and face Brock Lesnar. We'll see. We see how that played out. It didn't. But outside of a world championship run, which I think he's deserving of, I mean, I couldn't really complain about the position he's in, given where they've put him in the past and where they've just recently put him with Lana. He's in a group that is way more relevant than I thought any of us thought it would be, and that's a lot of credit due to MVP. He's also, yes, he's fighting Retribution on a weekly basis, but he's also destroying them on a weekly basis, seemingly single-handedly, is what I'm trying to say. So, again, I mean, all things considered, I don't think he's in a bad position. Unless you're looking for him to be world champion coming out at the beginning of Raw, cutting excellent promos, and being the main event of Raw. I think that's probably not going to be in the cards for him based on everything that I've seen him do over the last several years since he came back to WWE. But look, I mean, if they're putting him as United States champion, he's a credible champion, he's kicking ass. I really can't complain about what they've done with Bobby Lashley, other than, yeah, I would like to have seen a championship run, you know, at least one, a big one. So, alrighty, that concludes our voicemail segment for the week. And again, follow me on Twitter, guys, at @wrestling_audio, @wrestling_audio on Twitter, WWE_podcast on Instagram, or you can email us at realwwpodcast@gmail.com. Alrighty, let's dive into some other things that happened this week. And again, on Monday Night Raw, I covered that in depth on my Monday Night Raw review. I guess the big news item coming out is Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle is no more. You may be saying, what am I talking about? Matt Riddle, WWE, Vince, has dropped his first name. So why don't we add that to the graveyard of names dropped? Right? Like, who's the most recent? Well, Antonio Cesaro, Antonio, right? We have had Elias, believe it or not, Elias Samson. You remember that, right? So there goes his name. Andrade Cien Almas. It's just Andrade. Apparently has no last name now. So Matt Riddle's no longer Matt Riddle. He is just Riddle. This may be the worst of all, because actually Cesaro has ended up working out. You know, I actually am fine with that. And when it happened, I was okay with Antonio being dropped. Andrade Cien Almas, I was actually still kind of like, why? It seemed to flow and it fit with his Hispanic character. I mean, like, why Andrade Cien Almas? Great. You know, I have no problem with that. Elias Samson, he's just Elias now. Kind of neutral on that. You know, but I don't understand Riddle. I know the jury's still kind of out on that, but Riddle? Just Riddle? So, he's no longer Matt Riddle? Is Matt such a terrible name? I mean, I don't think so. I'm a little biased, but I'm not following why they just dropped the Riddle name. Or dropped the Matt name. Riddle just sounds goofy. It's a goofball. He sounds, what is he, like the Riddler? Is he going to come out next week and, you know, cut a promo on Batman? It's terrible. It's terrible. What are they doing? Do they think that really, you know, first of all, with Matt Riddle, is Matt, again, it's not that, it's a very, I think, I don't want to say manly name, but it's certainly not feminine if they're worried about, you know, creating more credibility. I think they've actually detracted from his credibility if you're going to do that. And just, you know, he doesn't have a last name that's, that's really like solid and manly and brute. It's just Riddle. Okay, so his name's just Riddle. Is he's like a puzzle you got to solve. It's stupid. I don't know. I'm not a fan of that. But moving on beyond that, and we can add him to the graveyard or the island of misfit toys, wherever the hell else all these drop names go when they get cut by Vince McMahon. So the big news story, again, that came from Raw, and I'll just touch on this because the rest of it I don't want to rehash everything. If you want to hear my full Monday Night Raw review, it's still on the feed. I know we have Raw tomorrow night, but so it'll be 6 days old, but still. The big item again is Randy Orton and The Fiend seemingly on a collision course. And with Randy Orton a couple of years ago burning down Bray Wyatt's house in the woods that, I guess, assumingly contained the remains of Sister Abigail, which ended up actually somehow, if you remember the storyline, not taking away from Bray Wyatt's powers, but somehow strengthening them before their match. I mean, I don't know how that works. I don't know the physics behind that. Somebody please explain to me. But I just think that Randy Orton is, I mentioned this, and the phrase I used on Monday was he's got a lot of irons in the fire. And he does, because he's got The Fiend, who's seemingly chomping at the bit to challenge him. He has Drew McIntyre, who just will not let go. And he has the upcoming Roman Reigns at Survivor Series. So he has a lot of opponents right now. And the looming Edge. You could add a fourth to that. Edge is looming in the distance. A few months away, probably. 2 months, maybe three. Until he gets himself back into the WWE landscape. And challenges Randy Orton, presumably, at a WrestleMania, for a WrestleMania match for the championship, and it's supposed to be an I Quit match. Now, again, is that something that is set in stone? Of course not. But these are the looming rumors. So, the all-important, all-famous wrestling rumors out there. So, Randy Orton, he's a lot going on. And am I tired of Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton? Yeah, I'm done with it. I mean, I'm ready for Drew to kind of move on to somebody else, something else. He'll get the championship back. And when he does, it'll be in front of fans and we can all celebrate then. But for right now, Orton or Drew is a made man. He's looked at as legitimate, as a true champion. And we can all hang our hat on that and, you know, really tip our cap to WWE for keeping it on him for nearly 7 months. So, you know, look, I don't think you could have asked for much more than that. And Randy Orton, as good of a heel as he is, I think deserves this long championship run. And I hope it's till WrestleMania. I'm assuming that's the position here that they're taking, is that from now until early April, or isn't WrestleMania the end of March, whenever the heck WrestleMania is this year, that it, first of all, is hopefully in, what is it, Raymond James, or no, it's in Tampa this year, I believe. So hopefully it's in front of fans, not in the Performance Center, not in the Amway Center, but rather in front of, you know, like warm-bodied fans, real fans. So, okay, moving on, though. That was a really big ticket item from Raw. Yes, much other things happened. A lot of other things happened. But that certainly was the big item. Now, moving on again to SmackDown. Let me spell out some praise, with Roman Reigns. You know, I have, for the better part of his career, come up on here for... How many episodes do we have here? I'll look here. We have 517 episodes as of this recording right now. And that's just under the WWE podcast feed. We had another show beyond that. But just for this show's purpose, I have torn down the babyface character of Roman Reigns. I have ripped it so many new you-know-what that it's unrecognizable at this point of how much I despise the Roman Reigns babyface character and why they are missing the boat. I've explained it in detail as to why he would be one of the best heels WWE has ever had, ever. And I have said it till I'm blue in the face. And I said over the last 6 years, again, I say 6 years, this show has been in existence for about three. But for podcasting that I've done over the last 6 years, I have... said many times, oh, this has got to be it. This is a perfect time to turn him heel here and here and here and here. Turn him heel here. And WWE was steadfast and put their fingers in their ears saying la, 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 and just moving forward, stubbornly moving forward, which is a tribute and really a fault of Vince McMahon at times of just staying the course. Damn it, we're going to get him over. Well, they finally caved. It took 6 freaking years, but they finally decided to make Roman Reigns the bad guy. And what a treat we're getting. And I'm sure that there are people in WWE saying to themselves, Vince, you see what we've missed over the last 6 years of what an amazing heel this guy could be? And you know, you pushed him as a babyface begrudgingly. The fans begrudgingly went along. It was not comfortable. He never cut a great promo. Never did. And I still believe he has never cut a great promo. I mean, in his babyface run anyway. And boom, you get this now. And Vince would probably say, well, if we turned him heel back then, he wouldn't have been ready. We wouldn't have got this version of Roman. BS. Right? Like, the story wouldn't have been the same, but the character would have been in the proper role for what he naturally emulates or naturally radiates. And that's arrogance. That's entitlement. And he's got a naturally just an annoying aura about him. As, I mean, again, I'm not speaking for everybody. People know that on this podcast, I am not a fan of the babyface Roman Reigns character. Now, if that could evolve coming out of the heel run, he could be a massive babyface, and I think he will be. I think he will finally be, whenever they turn him back babyface, and hopefully it's not for like a year. Like, I mean, seriously, a year or more. That if they do it properly, they could finally get him to the place that they always thought they could get him. Vince thought that he could get him by being forcibly just stubborn and not listening to the fans of being, this guy is going to be an amazing heel. And now they're seeing the potential being realized. There's really not much negative I can say about this. For all the things I'm critical about and all the things that I am not a fan of with WWE. And there's a lot, but there's also a lot of good. And this is one of the best things, if not the best thing, that WWE has done in 2020. Yes, Randy Orton's run was amazing as a hot heel. Probably the hottest heel WWE has had in many years, 5 to 10 years. And they extinguished that with Keith Lee's win at Payback, I believe it was. I think it was Payback. Bad move. Terrible move. That took away so much steam from Randy Orton's run. I was not a fan of the 2 losses he took from Drew McIntyre on the back end of that. And now he's champion. So there's good. I mean, how I think it would have been even better had they not decided to put a loss in the column for Randy Orton until Edge came back and he just captured the championship and continued to just run chaos, kick people in the head, and no one can get over on him. But that's me. That's how I would have done it. So even that, I think Roman Reigns has even superseded that story with Randy Orton. That's how good he's been. And credit to Jey Uso too, right? Supporting casts are extremely important. Can't talk to yourself. Jey Uso has exceeded my expectations as well for how real they're making this feel. I mean, did they all just take professional acting classes while they're in COVID? I mean, are they doing this like on a webinar or something? I don't know what it is, but they're doing excellent work. The tears, the emotions, everything feels authentic. It's awesome. And Roman Reigns' tone, everything about him has just changed. It's like he's just coming out there. And he's super annoyed to be there. He's everything with him is a hairpin trigger. He's all about respect. He's all about people acknowledging who he is. And then he's the head of the table. He's the alpha male. It's all about that. And this is where Roman Reigns belongs. He belongs here. And this is brilliant. And having Jey Uso, quote, turn heel. I don't know if he really turned heel as much as he was forced into this. So you could say it was a heel turn by force, not by choice. Beating up Daniel Bryan this past week on SmackDown. I think this also positions Daniel Bryan in a good place. If this is truly his final full-time run, as Daniel Bryan has gone on the record of saying, if this is truly Daniel Bryan's last full-time run, then I think he and Roman Reigns could have a multi-month rivalry. I think that's a good place to go for Daniel Bryan. If you're going to do this, let's do it right. Have Daniel Bryan stand up to Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, and maybe Jimmy Uso eventually joins him. I was hoping they'd go this road. And it seems as if they are. And Jey Uso has seen the light, according to Roman Reigns. And he has finally acknowledged that he is the head of the table and that he's with him. It's weird that he still calls him Us. I mean, can he not just say Roman? Is Us like Angelo Dawkins fam? Is that kind of like, you can't say Angelo Dawkins, or you can't say Montez Ford. You have to say fam. Is this slang I'm not aware of? I know what fam stands for, family, right? Us, is it Uso, but is Uso something, a word I don't know? I don't know. It's just like, do you have to say Us? I don't know. It's just one little nitpick. This is my own personal thing. But I don't know. My point is, though, you want me to praise something? I love this. This is amazing work by all involved. Everyone should pat themselves on the back for this. From you know, Paul Heyman, obviously, being a nice little addition to Roman Reigns, and just his quiet promos that are anger, like it's anger's building inside of him. Jey Uso's performance, he's got the best, he's clearly the best point of his career. And Jimmy Uso, too, for the limited role he's been in. So, you know, hats off to everyone around. I mean, I hope this continues. And it looks like Daniel Bryan is up next for Roman Reigns. All right. Well, let's continue on here to some other things that happened that I wanted to get my thoughts in about. And that would be, let's see, the qualifying match for, well, that was the Jey Uso defeating Daniel Bryan for the Survivor Series qualifying match. So Daniel Bryan's out. We have Jey Uso in. And let's see, Murphy and Aaliyah. Oh, Lord. Okay, well, we go from the amazing to the awkward. And I cannot believe we're still talking about the Mysterios and Seth Rollins. I don't even need to go on a rant about this, because there's no need. My energy is better spent elsewhere. I have spent many times on here ranting about this, about, you know what? When this first started and it was hot, it was good. I'm not taking away how good it was at one point. And about 2 months ago, we said, I'm done with this, right? It was September. And we said, okay, I'm done. This needs to end. Please end this. And it continues. And it continues. And now we have this love triangle. Well, not love triangle. We have this love angle between Aaliyah and Murphy. And we're supposed to care about this. Why? This is a humanized Murphy, I think. I guess that's the point. It's not about Aaliyah. It's about Murphy. And if that's the case, that's fine. I think Murphy does need a bit of a depth added to his character beyond really good in the ring. Like, that is essentially like what Murphy's known for, is he's just really, really effing good in the ring. And that's great. But you need depth. Because that's the superficial thing. That's important, but it's not what's going to get fans to draw, you know, go into the arena, buy tickets. It's emotional investment. That's what you need, because you need depth in characters, and that this adds depth to his character, where he's, I don't guess, making out with Aaliyah Mysterio. And by the way, she's 19. And he's like, oh, 30. Anyway, things are a little weird there. But Dominic and Rey ended up beating up Murphy, and then Seth Rollins. I mean, it's just like, Please, WWE, I am begging you right now publicly, end this. I never want to see these four men in the ring at the same time again. I don't care if it's a one-on-one with Seth and Ray, or I'm sorry, with Murphy and Seth Rollins. That needs to be fleshed out, and I think they'd have a really good, quick little 1 to 2 month program. That end of it hasn't been really settled, but Dominic and Ray need to go away. This thing would get booed to the high heavens if it was in front of fans. Again, this is one of those WWE's lucky as hell that we're not in front of a live audience, because this would get crapped all over, because people are just sick of it. It's done. It's dead. So I think I've said enough. Okay, moving on. Okay, what else happened on SmackDown here? Again, all the Street Profits defeated Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro. Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro, you knew were not getting that victory, especially with the Street Profits going on to Survivor Series in a high-profile match against New Day in a champion versus championship match. So Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro get to go back to the place that I think WWE always viewed them in, kind of the really good in-ring talent, but not quite the ones that we want to, you know, have as champion for a long period of time. And yeah, they held it for a while, but they didn't really showcase them. Right? They get the occasional promo. And that's pretty much it. Bianca Belair defeated Billie Kay and Natalya after hitting Kay with the kiss of death. Here's where I'm also not a fan of things here. I mentioned this early in the show. This match came about when the three women confronted, I'm reading this just to make sure I don't miss any details, right from CBS Sports, just so you know. Okay, I'm going to give people credit where it's due. The match came about when the three women confronted Adam Pearce backstage, all claiming they should be captain of the Women's Survivor Series team at the pay-per-view. And Pearce told them that they could settle things in the ring, with the winner earning the spot on the team. I mean, first of all, are there really enough women to go around where to have qualifying matches? I mean, Raw only had one, and the other four were just there because they were essentially the only options. And apparently on SmackDown, we're going to have qualifying matches. It wasn't shown, but it probably looks like we're taking that road. But beyond that, beyond the whole women's lack of depth and we just throw people on the team, again, we have grown men and women in their 30s and 40s in some cases looking to be captains of their team. Is this the high school volleyball team? Why are we still fighting? Every year we get this crap. Not only does these matches not matter, but we also get these men and women who get paid billions of dollars concerned about being captains of their team, as if there is some true value to that. There's zero value, let me tell you. But then these three women all, you know, have their cute little catchphrases, and it was extremely produced. You want to know exactly what's wrong with WWE today? In a nutshell, if you're like, Matt, I don't get it. Can you just like sum up what your problem is with WWE? You always ran. Eh. Well, go watch this segment. This will, in a nutshell, show you everything that I despise about the production value of WWE and the micromanagement of their promos. It will exactly... You cannot tell me you feel anything for this. This is a highly scripted, micromanaged segment. It's terrible. It's terrible. I mean, it is what it is. But moving on. Sasha Banks cuts a promo on Bayley. After beating her for the SmackDown Women's Championship at Hell in a Cell, she said that she realized when Bayley turned on her, it wasn't that their team was unstoppable, it was that she was. And then Bayley comes out, and that's where they got the... rematch settled for next week. So, I mean, again, this wasn't a bad SmackDown. Oh, and I can't forget two other things. Kevin Owens defeated Dolph Ziggler in a fairly quick match with a stunner, and Robert Roode involved himself on the outside, which got him kicked out. Ziggler, I mean, again, Owens earns that opportunity. He's on the SmackDown team. Ziggler is like the most versatile guy I've ever seen in WWE. He goes from Raw Underground to commentary to challenging Drew McIntyre for the world, the WWE Championship, to going back and reuniting with Robert Roode, to being in a qualifying match. There is just nothing in the plans for Ziggler. He is the guy that you just, he's like a stopgap. You know, when there's like, oh, well, who are they going to face? Somebody credible. Ziggler. You know, like, we need somebody on commentary. Who can fill in? Ziggler. We need somebody to put the ring together. Who can help? Ziggler, right? He is the guy that kind of can do it all, but can't do anything, any one thing really, really good. So, again, he is what it is. He's way more talented than I am in a multitude of ways. But that's how I think WWE views him, because there's nothing congruently logical about the storyline of Dolph Ziggler in his career, period. Especially lately. Okay. Lars Sullivan was interviewed by Corey Graves. This was interesting. He took issue with being called a freak and recalled being made fun of in his youth before crying and making those same kids scream 20 minutes later. And he said he wants to make the world his personal playground and personal hell on earth. Well, if he's going to make himself put himself in hell, I mean, that's not really too smart. But it was nice to see that he actually got an interview and he actually got some context to who Lars Sullivan is. Is his lisp a little distracting? Probably no more than Jack Swagger's was. Jake Hager, right? But it's a little distracting. Every S, you know, I would avoid S words. Not really possible. I'm not making fun of it. It's just, it is what it is. It's distracting. Let's call it what it is. A spade a spade. But he is certainly got the it factor. I'm looking forward to what they can do with him. I'm putting his personal problems aside for those that are like, remember all what did he do with that married woman? And, oh, everything he said. Look, I mean, there have been a lot of people in WWE over the years that have said terrible things, racist things. Hulk Hogan's one of them. Look, Roman Reigns failed a drug test once. Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso have been and had DWIs multiple times. We've had Randy Orton a number of problems. I mean, like, so let's not, you know, exactly throw stones when we live on glass houses here. So I'm fine with letting him on a professional level into my mind on a professional level. I think it's fine. I'm interested to see what they do with him. I really am. It was nice to see that they actually gave him an interview spot. And I think that's where he should live right now are those pre-taped backstage promos that are done beforehand. I think that's where he will live and thrive. So, alrighty, guys. Well, I think that does it for me tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show. I will be back on Tuesday with your Monday Night Raw review on the Election Day 2020. So everyone, literally, put your seatbelts on. This is going to be a wild ride. I guarantee it. Whether you're into politics or not, it's going to be unavoidable in your life. So, until then, email the show, realwwpodcast@gmail.com. You can call the show or you can follow us on Twitter @wrestling_audio or on Instagram @wrestling_podcast. Jeez, I'll get it right. I'm very tired, guys, as you can tell. Alrighty. Well, that does it for me, guys. As always, I'll talk to you soon.